Mum and Dad and Denny saw the passing out parade at Puckapunyal. It was a long march from cadets. The 6th Battalion was the next to tour, and it was me who drew the card. We did Canungra and Shoalwater before we left. And Townsville lined the footpaths as we marched down to the quay. This clipping from the paper shows us young and strong and clean. And there's me in me slouch hat with me SLR and greens. God help me. I was only 19.
I still get the tingles going up your back, that does. And I know Michael Thompson at Nine, whenever he hears that, he certainly starts to quiver. But we're going to talk about a book that's linked to that song. It's called The Jungle Dark. It's written by Steve Strevens, and it deals with, if you like, the characters who form I Was Only 19, the story of the person or the people who were only 19 when the Vietnamese conflict they either enlisted or it came their way. And we're going to talk about it, but we're going to explain exactly where the song I Was Only 19 came from as well. And Steve Strevens, the author of The Jungle Dark, joins me now. Thanks for your time, Steve.
No worries, Gary.
All right, we know that John Schumann, who's been on this program, he wrote the song I Was Only 19. He'd heard the stories of his brother-in-law, Mick Storen. But somehow in all that, the name of a bloke called Frank Hunt, or Frankie, came out. Just explain the correlation between those two gentlemen.
Well, what happened was that Frank was the radio operator in the platoon, and he was always very, very close to the platoon commander, Lieutenant Peter Hines. And obviously he had to be next to him because of messages that would be coming in and out. So Peter Hines actually was the guy that stood on the mine. But there's always some confusion. You know, there was all these blokes killed and wounded, 18 or so wounded, and nobody really knew who it was until later. Mm. And when the song was written, John Schumann actually had another name in there, but it didn't fit. It was Tommy, and Tommy giving connotations of Englishman and what have you didn't really fit. So Frankie fitted perfectly because he was the closest to Peter Hines, and it could have been him anyway.
Yep.
So that fitted. But John, after he'd talked to Mick Storen about the song and got all the stories and from Mick, and had to go and see Mick, said go and see Frankie to get his permission to use it, and Frank gave his permission because they all wanted to protect Peter Hines's wife and young son. Mm-hmm. That every time the song came out, she might think, oh, Peter kicked a mine, and, you know,
yep,
the media and what have you, if the song became any good. So that was the story behind that.
Well, it certainly became good. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Now, the story of Frank Hunt, though, that's who you are specifically focusing on here. Now, Frank Hunt he did lose his legs during that incident.
No, he didn't.
Sorry, apologies. Yep. I'm just trying to sort it out in my head here. He was injured as a result, though, badly injured. Why is it now, do you think, that the story is coming out in this way?
Well, Frank and I are good mates.
Yep.
And have been for quite a long period of time. And the disconnection between Vietnam veterans when they came home was such that nobody really kept in contact with each other until 1983, when the song and the Welcome Home Parade in Sydney came about. And the story is coming out now because Frank was prepared to talk about everything, as was Mick. And there's been so much, so uninformed writing about it over the years. And the truth needed to be told, that this is what happened, these are the people were involved, and everything else you've heard is sort of wrong, yeah.
Right, okay. How is Frank Hunt in terms of... it's the thing about the scars that hang around with these guys. I don't think too many people understand it, that some of the things that they saw and had to go through during Vietnam has left permanent scars. How's he going these days?
Look, absolutely. You're dead right, Gary, and one of the little bits of writing in the book says, in war there are no unwounded soldiers. and it's true. Now, Frank was in hospital for 2 years. He was in a coma for 8 weeks. He still has about 30 pieces of shrapnel and crushed bone floating around in his body. He's had 25 operations, and yet he's contributed to the community in his hometown of Bega for so many years. You know, he got an OBE for it, and all the things that he's been involved with Vietnam veterans has sort of kept him going. He's now at the stage of his life where the pain has become too much, and he's retreated into almost a reclusiveness where he just stays at home or goes out every now and again.
But when you say the pain, is that the psychological pain, or is that...
Well, both. He has PTSD and he has physical pain. There's nobody been able to fix his pain. He said to his shrink that in 40-odd years he can remember 2 days where he hasn't had, you know, pain in his body for something. And if he moves one way or another, a nerve will be hit by a bit of bone or a bit of shrapnel, and he'll have to lie down for 2 or 3 days.
Does he tell you, and I know, you know, obviously you probably look at this in the book, but does he regret it? Does he regret signing up?
No. He regrets things that happens to him. He says he wished things had turned out a bit better. But the decisions, he doesn't, you know, spend his life looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
He has to a certain extent, but can't do anything about it. So he tries to handle whatever has been sent his way. And he's been very, very good at that and a great example for that. You know, with counselling, well, other Vietnam veterans, he worked with them for a long, long while. He worked with children, counselling children as well, that had troubles in their life, saying that, you know, adversity can be overcome in most instances if you really put your mind to it.
Does he have a sense of how the rest of Australia view the Vietnam conflict these days? You know, with what we've just been through in terms of Gallipoli, and obviously this very significant anniversary that's just come and gone. Do people like Frank reflect on how the rest of us think about Vietnam and its place?
I think most of, and I'm a veteran too, most of us do think about that. And I think the big thing that comes out of it is in, you know, the First World War, Second World War, there was almost a distinct good v evil thing. But most of the Vietnam veterans think, okay, what did we do that for? You know, it's, you know, because the government said they're going to protect us from communism. When you're young, you just do what you're told. But afterwards, you reflect on why you were doing it. And in, you know, the wars 1 and 2, there was a reason for it. But a lot of Vietnam veterans can't find too many good reasons for what we were doing in Vietnam.
Did he ever believe his mum, who wrote to him at some point and said, "Don't forget to keep writing me letters because your mum worries and you're over there doing God's work"? Did he ever think he was doing God's work?
Well, look, that was he wondered a lot about that, and he was brought up in a Catholic family and attended church and all that. But he did say later, and there's a small passage in the book that says that his religious beliefs were lost somewhere in the Vietnamese jungle.
And fair to say that innocence was completely lost. Oh, I mean, you know, his background couldn't have been any more. Don't mean this in a you know, nasty way. I mean, pretty naive, 18-year-old, from a country town.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have all these dreams of doing this, that and the other, you think about things, but it really is naivety. And he went believing that the government said, that yes, we'll stop communism up there rather than down here, you know, the worries about invasions, all that, which were fairly ridiculous even at the time. But after a while, you know, you think, gee, what the hell is this all about, you know? And then later on, when they come back, they knew even less about why they were there.
So how much, I mean, you're a veteran, like you said, how much time do you reckon people like Frank sit around and think about?
Well, not war? A great deal, actually.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, there are some veterans that do. Some veterans think about it a lot, but that's something that's bad for them. You know, there's a lot of activities and a lot of programs in place to make the opposite true, to not think about it. But sometimes, when you come to terms with what's happened and you think about it, you can get over it and you move on to something else.
Yeah.
And there's a public Frank and a private Frank. There's the guy that was out in the community doing all these wondrous things, and yet nobody saw the guy that went home and laid on the floor because he couldn't lie in bed, you know, and what have you. But they're the sort of things that keep people going. And it's important to remember that if you keep your mind occupied, then the little devils don't play so hard in there.
It's true to say that John Schumann's brother-in-law, Mick Storin, in all this, he wasn't comfortable with being at the forefront of when the song was released and, you know, the knowledge that he had that a lot of it's come from his stories. But he wasn't comfortable with that. Is he changed?
No, Mick has changed in an extent over the last few years. He still likes to be in the background, and he was really good with the information that's in this book about him, because it tells the truth about the song and why everything happened the way it did. But Mick's one of those guys that likes to stay in the background. He doesn't like the limelight, doesn't like the publicity. He just wants to go about living his life in a nice, peaceful, kind way. Mm. And enjoy it, and his family and his kids and what have you.
Have you or any of those two been back?
Mick's been back to Vietnam, yeah, a couple of times, but Frank and I haven't, no.
And is there any reason for that, can I ask?
No, not really.
Not really? Just haven't got around to it?
Can't afford it? No, it doesn't, you know, it's not really...
It's not something that certainly yourself, or in this case Frank, have sort of had on a wish list.
No, there's no ghost to bury or anything like that. It's just haven't got around to it, haven't really thought about it. Been to Europe, but haven't been to Vietnam.
Well, I think, you know, when I've gone through the book as best I could in the time I had, obviously, you know, it's an adventure. It's a story of adventure. I mean, obviously, there were some fatal consequences and some major psychological consequences and obviously injuries as well. But it is the story of young men seeking adventure. Now, I don't think that's changed since Vietnam when it comes to signing up, does it?
No, it hasn't. And whatever they say, you know, about stopping war, we're never going to stop war, let's be realistic about it, and there'll always be people that'll sign up. I mean, there were guys signing up for all sorts of things as the atrocities were occurring and as people were getting killed. You know, there's headlines, people killed in Vietnam all over the joint, and there's still people signing up. So that's human nature. There's an adventure in that, you know, it won't happen to me type stuff.
Yep.
And the book portrays, I believe, an honest account of these young fellas that went and did what they wanted to do, and they suffered the consequences, both physical and mental. And I tried to write it in an honest, unembellished way, which you don't need dramatic effect in it, because everything was dramatic enough, you know.
No,
it tries to take... Hopefully try to take people and put them in the jungle where it was wet and cold, and not cold necessarily, but wet and muddy and just rubbishy all the time. These young blokes were scared.
When that mine went off, did Frank think that was it, really? I mean, when you look at, I know that the description you've given of some of the injuries he did receive to his legs and so on, and what he was being told by people around him about the damage, did he think he might not come home?
Well, he did, and see, he had the last right set over him five times.
Jeez.
Because it was whether he thought he might be, the doctors and everybody else thought that he was a goner. And he thought at one stage, well, that's okay, I've made my peace with my mother and everything, and if this is the way it's got to be, I feel okay, and, you know, if I die, I die. Fatalistic, I suppose, but fortunately he didn't, and it was... a long, 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 long struggle.
Indeed it was. Now, look, don't get the wrong idea, folks, if you're listening to this. It's called The Jungle Dark. There's a fair bit of humour in there too, Steve, young lads can get up to.
Yeah, indeed. The Jungle Dark is a line in the song. You know, it says that nighttime's just a jungle dark and a barking M16. And the jungle dark is real because of the dark jungle, and it's metaphoric because of the dark jungle of the mind. And this is not all doom and gloom.
No.
It's pretty harsh and straightforward and graphic at times, but there's also the, you know, as you say, the humour and what young blokes get up to in in places other than home.
Yeah, exactly. Stays on tour supposed to, what happens on tour is supposed to stay on tour, but you change
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, Steve, thanks very much for joining us and discussing it. And I reckon anyone that's ever heard the song and wondered, if they want to know more, this is a great opportunity to know the full story behind I Was Only 19. I do appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks very much, Gary.
Good on you.